Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is a special Dear Andy edition. Ari, bachelor party this weekend. Don't know when we're getting him back exactly, but it's coming fairly soon, we think, if we didn't lose him to Vegas. And he's got to get married very soon, so he better not be lost for long, at least. But I do know he's coming back because he texted me on Sunday and he said this: someone told me a math riddle I want to tell people on the podcast while I was drunk that absolutely blew my mind. Now, I don't think it's that hard to blow the mind of a drunk Ari. I'm not sure it's that hard to blow the mind of a sober Ari. So I'm not sure how we're all going to feel about this riddle. Will we feel like it's that mind-blowing? But we're going to let Ari have his time. He will have the stage. We're also going to talk a little bit about the most important players on some of the biggest teams in college football. That's something Ari had brought up last week and I thought was a great idea. So we're going to get to that this week on the show. Also this week, we'll be ranking the SEC jobs. We got the Big 12 last week. I know we did it last year, but the lineups have changed. And if you're coaching in the SEC or the Big 12 this year, there's a very good chance you're going to coach in the new look versions of those leagues in a few years. So where do Texas and Oklahoma stack up? How have our views of the jobs changed? I think I probably owe Tennessee fans an apology when it comes to the Auburn job, Tennessee job debate that we had last year. So prepare for me to fall on my sword pretty hard on that one. And also, we had a lot of discussion on Twitter this weekend about the fry discussion that was tacked on to our debate about the fish sandwiches. You know, we had Max Olson eating his first fillet of fish. I was trying the Arby's fish sandwiches. Ari was just feeling hurt that Pusha T went in so hard on the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish. But we had a French fry discussion that was sort of a tacked on to that. And it got pretty heated on Twitter over the weekend. We had, you know, we found the two people in the world who think crinkle cut fries are just awesome. We found a bunch of people who tried to tell me that Chick-fil-A fries don't taste good when I know they do because my taste buds work and theirs don't. So we'll get into that later in the week as well. But first, your questions. You know I love them. You know I love when you help drive the show. You guys ask very insightful, thoughtful questions because you are the smartest, best-looking podcast listeners in the world. We'll start with a couple of questions that I actually answered in the written version of the Dear Andy mailbag on The Athletic last week. But now that we know the identities of the final four teams in the NCAA basketball tournament, we've seen the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Neither of those had happened when I answered this mailbag question. I think it makes it even more interesting. So we'll start with Justin's question. If college football does get an expanded playoff done, what would the college football equivalent of St. Peter's making a playoff run like they have? What teams over the past couple of decades would have been the scariest team to play with an expanded playoff? And this question also came from Rob. How much chaos is too much in March Madness? We all love seeing Kentucky lose to a 15 seed, but if the Final Four was all 13 plus seeds, it would likely draw the lowest ratings ever. What does your ideal Sweet 16 look like, and is it better to sprinkle in the upsets everywhere or to have one region become complete chaos? Well, I think we're going to combine these two because what you saw, I think, out of the second weekend of this NCAA tournament was sort of the perfect storm of what an expanded college playoff in football should be, because you had a lot of blue bloods, some upstart power programs, one completely out of left field team, and you got some exciting results, but then in the Final Four, you got exactly what you want in terms of heavyweights just slugging it out. I mean, think about this Final Four. Kansas, Villanova, A one seed from one region, a two seed from another region, a team that has played in the Final Four a bunch of times in Kansas, a Villanova team. They've got two guys who were regulars on that last Villanova team that won the national championship in 2018. So they played more than 10 minutes a game. They were freshmen. You've got Duke, North Carolina in the other Final Four semifinal. Like, Coach K is retiring. He is playing, or he's coaching either one more game or two more games at most. So this is huge. And to play against North Carolina, which, oh, by the way, ruined his final game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. To play them in the Final Four is incredible. And you also, the North Carolina element to this is, yes, it's North Carolina, but North Carolina was an 8 seed. Like, they're not supposed to be here. They're sort of the team that Justin's talking about, the who would be scariest to play with an expanded playoff. North Carolina is 10-1 since losing to Pitt in mid-February. The only game they lost was in the ACC tournament to Virginia Tech, and that was the Virginia Tech team that went on and won the ACC tournament. They were just on an incredible run in that tournament. So that's the only team that's been able to beat North Carolina in that period. So they're the one that you wouldn't let in to the college football playoff unless it was expanded. They wouldn't even have a shot, but they're here. And look, they earned their way here. Now, St. Peter's was not the toughest team to beat, but they also beat UCLA. I mean, they had to work their way to this point. So they beat Baylor. They beat a one seed. Like, they earned it. So I think this is going to be a fun Final Four. I mean, obviously, probably all the narrative going in is going to be about that Duke-North Carolina game, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I just think that this is what we would want out of our football Final Four. I'm trying to imagine what the equivalent of this is. This is let's say the college football playoff has expanded to 12 teams. This is like North Carolina getting in as an 8 seed is probably Notre Dame getting in as an 8 seed, or you know, Oklahoma getting in as an 8. This is a good team that maybe wasn't so good during the regular season, but has really good players, and then put together a really nice run. I think that's probably the best equivalent to that. And then you'd have Kansas, which is your equivalent to Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State, one of those that is kind of always in the mix, that is always has a chance to make it. You've got Villanova. And look, the Big East is a power conference in basketball. So this would be like a Power Five champ game. And I know Villanova didn't win the regular season Big East, but this would be that level of team. Because Villanova, I believe they beat Providence, which was the Big East regular season champ. I believe they beat them twice in the regular season. So this would be Georgia, I guess. This would be like Georgia that lost to Alabama in the SEC championship game, but is a worthy team in there. And then Duke, obviously, a number two seed, lots of future NBA players. I think you saw just how talented they are. Look, beating Texas Tech and then beating Arkansas in consecutive games is not easy. And you saw Duke handle those teams pretty well. I mean, they were down against Texas Tech late, but just the athleticism they have. Paolo Banchero is you know, one of those guys that there aren't many guys in college basketball that can handle him. He's a truly special player. So that's what that's like. With football, you get this four, maybe. But you don't get North Carolina. You would have gotten, you know, you would have gotten Arizona, or you would have gotten somebody like that instead. And I don't know. I think this was more fun getting to this way. And you had St. Peter's making the run. Now, there's really, as I wrote in the mailbag column, there's really no football equivalent to St. Peter's. They don't, you know, they don't even field a football team. This is one of the lowest resourced athletic departments in Division I. I believe the last year we looked up, the last reporting year, they reported to the Department of Education, they spent $1.5 million on basketball. You know, a team like Kentucky spent $18 million. So, but they did beat Kentucky. And you know, you can watch that game against North Carolina. There was a play in the first half of St. Peter's, North Carolina, where Armando Bacot grabs a rebound over two St. Peter's players, and he kind of grabs it with one hand and just brings it down. And you're like, Oh, that is a significant athletic difference. But Kentucky had the same level of athlete that North Carolina had, and St. Peter's beat them. Purdue had some guys that would easily play at North Carolina or easily play at Kentucky, and St. Peter's beat them. So I don't know that there's the football equivalent of that, but you know, there's some of those Boise State teams from a few years ago. The 2017 UCF team, I think, absolutely would have, because that 2017 UCF team would have been a 12 seed using the proposal that was put out last year. That team would have been a 12 seed. Now, I think it would have had to play Alabama and Tuscaloosa right off the bat, because remember, Alabama didn't win the SEC that year. Georgia did. So Alabama, according to the proposal, which, remember, the SEC is not necessarily going to back that piece of the proposal anymore. Greg Sankey actually told me that in an interview on SiriusXM a few weeks ago. The top four seeds need to be conference champs. That was the way it was proposed. We'll see if it winds up being that way. But let's say it did, you'd have UCF playing that Alabama team. I don't know if Alabama wins that game, because does Nick Saban pull Jalen Hurts if it's close? Because I think they're scoring on UCF. You know, remember, the reason Saban pulls Jalen Hurts for Tua Tagovailoa is he had come to the conclusion they were not going to score on Georgia without doing something different. They would have scored against UCF. This is the same reason I think if Oklahoma had beaten Georgia in the Rose Bowl in real life, that I think we would have gotten a shootout in an Alabama-Oklahoma national title game, and Oklahoma might have won it, because the Jalen Hurts Alabama offense would have been moving the ball on Oklahoma, but and scoring, so it wouldn't have been so dire. And I don't know that Tua gets in the game at that point. And then it's Baker Mayfield versus Jalen Hurts, and I don't know. Mackenzie Milton versus Jalen Hurts, kind of the same thing. That UCF defense, I'd argue, was better than that Oklahoma defense that year. So Alabama scores some. I don't know if they're scoring a ton. And if UCF got through that game, then things get kind of interesting. So I don't know. I think that would be a lot of fun, and I'm for that. I'd like to have seen the Boise State team that beat Oklahoma in the Statue of Liberty play. I'd like to have seen them in a playoff. Some of those the MAC schools that won championships and made it to the New Year's Six games or BCS at large, BCS games, Northern Illinois, Western Michigan, I don't know that they would have done as well. But I do think some of the teams from the American, the Houston team that beat Florida State in 2000 after the 2015 season in the Peach Bowl, I would have liked seeing that team. There are teams that can be Cinderellas. And there also are Power Five teams in college football that we could view as Cinderellas. This is even like the North Carolina situation in basketball this year. For example, South Carolina in 2010 is probably a 10 seed. I'm sorry, 2010, probably a 10 seed. The South Carolina 2012 team, I think, would have been a 10 seed as well. If South Carolina wins a game in the college football playoff, given South Carolina's history, that's massive. That's the biggest win in the history of the program. It's huge. I don't care if it's the first of four rounds and they get slaughtered in the second round. It would be massive for that program. There are years where you have, maybe a Purdue could be a team that has a chance to make it. Arkansas, I think the 2011 Arkansas team would have made the playoff. What if they won a game in the playoff? There are definitely programs that we would view, if they were to win two and get into the semis, would be viewed as a Cinderella, even though they're a Power Five program. Think of those good Bill Snyder Kansas State teams of the late 90s and early 2000s. Like, they're probably good enough. Like, that 2003 Kansas State team whipped Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. There's no reason to think they couldn't go in the playoff and beat somebody like that too. So if they were to get to the semifinals or even the final, they would be Cinderella. And would they win the whole thing? Probably not. I think depth is going to be even more important in a 12-team college football playoff, and that's going to favor the usual suspects. That's going to favor your Ohio States and your Alabamas and your Georgias. But I do think there are going to be some teams that are going to be viewed as Cinderella under those circumstances. And I also think there's some group of five type teams, and it's hard to say what, because remember, like UCF's going to the Big 12. There are those teams that can make a run. You know, there was a path of let's say Nick Saban doesn't pull Jalen for Tua and UCF got by Alabama. There was a path that UCF might have gotten into the semifinals or even the final that year. So I say, let's go have fun, get it bigger, because I liked in this NCAA tournament that we got where we got, but you had St. Peter's and Miami and Iowa State and Houston and all of these other teams that were involved in the process, and everybody was engaged and loving it. And even bigger fan bases like Purdue, like UCLA, like Arizona. That's all part of the fun. We're all, you know, all watching, all enjoying it. So I don't see why anybody would want just those four that we all thought were going to be there. That's not that much fun. Part of the fun is the journey. And I know you're saying, well, what about the regular season? The regular season is still going to be very important to deciding the 12. It's not a field of 68. Like, it's still not very many teams. So I think that'll be a lot of fun if it comes to fruition. Talking to the folks that run college football, I think an expanded playoff of some kind is coming down with the next TV contract. We know it's not happening until 2026. I think I still have to eat a hat or something like that, because I did say when they released a proposal, because my thought was, well, if they're going to tell us what the proposal is, they're definitely doing it. I think I said if it happens any later than like 2024, I have to eat a hat or something. So I probably need, maybe there's a Netflix show called like, But Is It Cake or something like that. If somebody can make a cake that looks like a hat, I'll eat that. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Our next question comes from Jonathan. Does NIL reopen the fun of the occasional two-sport star, or does the transfer portal increase the importance of spring practice roster evaluation in such a way that a college football coaching staff would refuse all attempts to play basketball or football? And I think we can throw baseball in here too. I think the last two really prominent two-sport stars, and we've had a few that played football and baseball, but the last two that were big-time football players that also played baseball happened to be number one picks in the NFL draft. Kyler Murray played baseball at Oklahoma. Jameis Winston played baseball at Florida State. Both were allowed to do it because they were so freaking good that who's going to say no? So I am curious about this, because like Jason Campbell, the former Auburn quarterback, tells a story of being recruited by Auburn to play football and basketball. Cliff Ellis had basically said, you've got a spot on the basketball team, just come on out after football season. And so he did. And Tommy Tuberville basically went to him and said, you know, we think you got a chance to be the starting quarterback next year. You really need to be working on your football all the time. And I don't think you should be playing basketball. And basically, basketball became not an option for Jason Campbell. Now, he had a very successful career as Auburn starting quarterback, so it did work out in that way, and he had a decent NFL career as well. But I would like to see that. I love the two spread, like Dion. It was amazing. I'm not sure we're ever going to see another Julius Peppers, a guy who is really good at football and also really good at basketball. Charlie Ward's another one like that. I remember talking to Charlie Ward, and I'm just thinking the entire time, how good of an athlete do you have to be to win the Heisman Trophy and then be like, nah, I'm going to be a first-round draft pick in basketball anyway? Like, that is crazy. And Julius Peppers, same thing. Julius Peppers was a good college basketball player at North Carolina, but he was just an incredibly freakish pass rusher. So, but there will be athletes that come along like that, and I want to see him be able to play both sports. I am curious. Jonathan brings up a good point. I think from an NIL standpoint, the better you can be at both of them, the bigger you can be in from an NIL standpoint. Like Kyler Murray in the NIL world would have been massive because of both of those things. The baseball might have been bigger at first. He might have been down for serious baseball money. Remember, he was drafted, I believe, number 5 overall by the Oakland A's. And so you would have had that part going on, plus the football part, especially as he's blowing up and moving toward the Heisman Trophy in 2018. I think there's an opportunity there for a guy, especially at the right school. You know, I think Peppers is an interesting one because, yes, North Carolina was pretty good when Julius Peppers was there in football, but not like they are in basketball. It was not the same thing. And so I think a program at that level can't really demand that guy just stick to football. I think it's better for them to just let him go do what he wants. And if what he wants is playing basketball, you let him play basketball. So I think we might see that more at that level. Like Ole Miss is a good example. Now, John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback, who is also a very good baseball player, has moved down to UCF. But Jerrion Ealy, the running back, was a really good baseball player. I believe his last season was wiped out by a shoulder injury suffered in football. So we didn't really get a chance to see what he could be as a baseball player. He's going to be an NFL running back. So that's where he's at now. But that we're going to see that there will be an opportunity for that. And I do think if you have somebody who's a very good, like a really good pitcher who also plays another position, I think Jameis Winston was in this situation. He was a pitcher and played quarterback. And I think that circumstance can work, and you can make big NIL bucks, especially if you're really good and playing for programs that matter in both sports. I think it kind of, honestly, I look at the Peppers thing. If your second sport is the bigger sport at the school, I think that probably gives you a better chance of playing it. But you know, with Jameis Winston, with Kyler Murray, they were good enough at football that they could sort of dictate the terms and say, I wanted to play. And I also think with the transfer portal being what it is now, and the rules being what they are, where you can transfer right away as an undergraduate and play, if someone tells a lie or doesn't follow through on a promise that a guy can play two sports, he could just leave, because that's one of the things that matters. I mean, Charlie Ward, I the reason he went to Florida State is because Bobby Bowden had let Brad Johnson play basketball and football. So Charlie knew that Bobby was not going to go back on his word. He was going to let him play basketball and football, and he did. So the coach is going to have to be true to his word. And if it's that important to the player to play two sports, he's going to pick the school that's going to let him, one. And now, because he can transfer right away, that school is probably going to let him, or he's going to go find someone that will. So I do think we will see more of that. I think football coaches is going to drive him nuts, because I'm with Jonathan that spring evaluation is really important. But I think if the player's good enough, If he's a good enough athlete, Deion Sanders, but he doesn't, it doesn't have to be Deion Sanders, doesn't have to be Kyler Murray, doesn't have to be Jameis Winston. It could be Jerrion Ealy. Like, Jerrion Ealy was a really good running back at Ole Miss. They didn't mind letting him go play baseball. And he was still going to be a good running back when he got back. And a lot of the times, like, Jameis Winston went through football practices and then joined the baseball team. So you can do that. So I hope we get to see more of it, because I honestly think it's so much fun, and it helps you appreciate just how good these athletes are. I mean, you think about Tony Gonzalez, Julius Peppers, Kyler Murray. Like, it's amazing to think that someone could be so good that they would potentially be capable of being a pro in two different sports. I don't know how good of an NBA player Julius Peppers might have been, but he was playing a significant role on the basketball team at North Carolina. He's pretty darn good at basketball. So, Jonathan, I hope that this means there's more. I can't wait. So, guys, when you're being recruited, demand. If you want to play two sports, demand it and see which schools say yes, because I think they're going to have to keep their promise or they're going to risk losing you. We go next to Sean. Texas Tech coach Kirk Bryant is going to be on the Bachelorette. Good or bad deal for recruiting? So Kirk Bryant is an offensive analyst at Texas Tech. The Bachelorette Facebook page released a group of photos of guys who may be contestants on the next season of the Bachelorette. Kirk B. from Lubbock, Texas was one of them, and his photo pretty much matches his photo from the Texas Tech football website. So that's the guy. Now, we don't know what's happened. I believe they just started filming, but we're going to need to look into this further. I don't watch the show, but there is a very devoted group of Bachelor / Bachelorette fans in the athletics college football universe. So we're going to need to get David Ubben on. We're going to need to get Nicole Auerbach. We're going to really need to break this down. I believe Chris Vanini's in that bunch. We're going to have to break this down further with people who really, really know what they're talking about. Because is it good for recruiting? I guess it depends on which members of the family you're recruiting. But you're going to be recognizable to some of them. That is a very, very popular show. The question is, does he fall in love? This is the twist, I gather. And I did more research into The Bachelorette before this recording session than I've ever done in my entire life. I guess there are going to be two Bachelorettes on this season. So there's two ladies. So that doubles his chances of finding love. So I don't know if he finds love. Does he keep going? There's so many people I guess I could ask about this. Jordan Rogers, former Vandy quarterback, works for the SEC Network now. I've done some radio with him. He was the Bachelorette. I believe he is currently married to the woman he met on the show. So he's one I could probably tap to learn something about this. Aaron Murray, the former Georgia quarterback, his brother was a contestant. Was his brother a bachelor? I'm not the right person to ask for this stuff, but we may have to get one of these folks on to kind of explain it to us. Jesse Palmer, obviously former Florida football player, was the Bachelor early. That's the only season I ever really watched a few episodes, because they had a spy among the ladies vying for Jesse's affection. And it was a lady named Jenny Shirali. And Jenny was not eligible to find love because Jenny was already married. Jenny is the wife of Nick Shirali, former Gators walk-on wide receiver, one of Jesse's best friends. So basically, Jenny was there to report back to Jesse all of the stuff that was going on in the mansion. I watched those episodes once Jenny, who I went to middle school with, once she was off the show, I was done. I was out. But I will delve deeper into this. I don't know. Again, I believe they just started taping, so we don't know how successful he's been. Has he gotten a rose? Who knows? But we will ask the experts. We will bring in an expert panel. We'll get David Ubben, Nicole Auerbach. Maybe we'll get Jordan Rogers. And we break it all down, because it's the off season, and what the hell else are we going to do? We'll be right back after these words.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
And a question from Charles, and he starts with a basketball question, and just like, I don't know that we do a lot of basketball, but hey, we did have an NCAA tournament question here, so we'll go with that. Since you wrote an article regarding the UGA basketball coaching job, which I did, I don't regret it, I still believe everything I said, and are very familiar with Florida athletics, what is your take on Mike White moving from Florida to UGA? He seems like a quote-unquote high-floor hire, which usually aren't regarded as sexy, but I believe he can raise the ceiling of UGA basketball established by Mark Fox, being a competitive 16-20 win team and making the tournament occasionally. Was the biggest part of White's issues at Florida being the guy who followed the guy being Billy Donovan, who won two national titles at Florida. Losing Keontae Johnson in December of 2020 really hurt UF's chances of success for the 2021 season, and you're right, UGA basketball is Kentucky football. Win some, be competitive, embrace the fan base in the school, and he can be here a long time. So here's my thought on that. When the news broke that Mike White was leaving Florida for Georgia, I thought, well, that certainly is a choice. Because I think Georgia probably had the money to throw at some established folks who've maybe had more success. Now, I know Mike White took the team, I believe Florida made the Elite Eight in 2017. They beat Wisconsin in the Sweet 16 and then lost to South Carolina in the Elite Eight. But for the most part, they were either a mid-seeded NCAA tournament team or didn't make the tournament under White. And that, after what Billy Donovan established, wasn't good enough. Do that at Georgia, and like Charles said, it represents an improvement over what's been going on there. It represents an improvement over the Tom Crean era. But I thought they could do a little bit better, and that's why I made the comparison to what Mark Stoops has done at Kentucky. Now, Mark Stoops doesn't like that. I've talked to him about this. He does not like when we say that it's the best job in college football and because it's you can get the kind of results that would get you run off at, say, Alabama or Georgia or LSU, and they build a statue of you. That he doesn't like to hear that. And I understand why. Because what he took over when Joker Phillips was fired was a dumpster fire. It was awful. And he brought Kentucky football back from the brink. He brought the fan base back. Because this was a very loyal fan base. Everybody thinks Kentucky's a basketball school, and it is. But they have a very, very loyal, supportive football fan base that had been through a lot. They had come and shown up for a lot. And the Joker Phillips era had pretty much soured them on the enterprise. And so Mark Stoops gets there, and he had to work his butt off to get them where they are. But I would argue, because of some of the same differences in basketball and football that I talked about at the beginning of the show, what Mark Stoops is doing in football at Kentucky is a little more similar to what Bruce Pearl is doing in basketball at Auburn. Now, Bruce Pearl almost won a national title in 2019. At Auburn. He had a team this year that was good enough to make the Final Four. They did not play well enough in the NCAA tournament, but they're certainly talented enough. You know, they had Jabari Smith Jr., probably the number one pick in the NBA draft this year. If he's not the number one pick, he'll be the number two. They had Walker Kessler, who was one of the best post players in the country. So they were very good. And I think what Bruce has done is on par in terms of level of difficulty. Like, what you have to do to sustain success at Kentucky football is incredibly hard. Like, the level of achievement of getting Kentucky to either the second or third best team in the SEC East consistently is as hard as raising you know, an SEC basketball program that spends money to a team that can make the Final Four. So it's as hard as what Billy Donovan did. You know, when the national titles are hard because a lot of times that is, there's some magic involved too. You know, Billy Donovan's recruiting class that wound up winning him two national titles was not considered one of the better classes in the SEC. Corey Brewer was a really good player and a really highly ranked recruit, but Al Horford, Joakim Noah, and Torian Green were not considered super recruits. You know, they were sons of professional athletes, all of them, but you know, Al was one who came on kind of late. Joakim came on very late, and Torian was viewed as you know, kind of a just a good solid point guard, and they just had magical chemistry. And Florida had some other pieces that fit well with them, but it's about getting them there multiple times. And Billy got them to the national title game with Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem in 2000. He got them to the Final Four with a really old team of guys that were not bound for NBA stardom, but they'd played together forever. It was Patrick Young and Will Yeget and Casey Prather. So it's getting multiple bites at the apple. And I think to do that at a place that isn't Kansas or Kentucky or North Carolina is akin to taking Kentucky football and making it the second best team in the SEC East multiple years, which I think is, I mean, we'll see what Billy Napier does at Florida, but Kentucky will start this year presumed as the second best team in the SEC East. And that's crazy. If you go back to the end of the Joker Phillips era, you tell somebody that, they will think you lost your mind. So that's where I thought Georgia could hire somebody like what, you know, it doesn't not actually Bruce Pearl, not the salesman aspect of it, but someone who could potentially be that guy. I think we've seen what Mike White is, which again, that represents an improvement for Georgia, but not necessarily what they're going to ultimately want. So it might, and now I do agree that the guy after the guy thing, there's a lot, and we'll see that when Nick Saban ultimately retires. We're seeing it with a couple different people. We'll see it with Brent Venables. You know, what can he do at Oklahoma now that Lincoln Riley's gone? Lincoln Riley was a guy after the guy who actually did really well. Ryan Day in college football is a guy after the guy who's done very well, but that's a hard place to be. You know, ask Ron Zook. Ron Zook, you look at the teams he put together, the recruiting classes he put together at Florida, he was doing it on that side of it, but just the game management part and not being Steve Spurrier, I think, cost him probably another year. I think, you know, if he's not directly following Steve Spurrier, he probably gets another year or two, but then maybe things turn out differently. So I will be curious to see what Mike White does in basketball at Georgia, but I think that's one, and we'll see. You know, Florida hired Todd Golden. They went with the hot, you know, mid-major coach who was at San Francisco. We'll see if that's good. But the SEC in basketball is a snake pit, just like it is in football. Now, they didn't get anybody in the Final Four, but they were consistently good. And you're dealing with Eric Musselman. You're dealing with John Calipari. You're dealing with Bruce Pearl. You're dealing with Rick Barnes. You got a lot to fight against. It's an uphill battle. It's not quite the same as dealing with Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and Brian Kelly, but you know, it's not easy. So we'll see how it goes. But Charles also had another question, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. And I feel like I need to answer that. He called it a general curiosity question. Is Ari really the half-baked man boy that he comes across as on the Andy Staples Show in real life? The predicaments he finds himself in are hilarious, but a lot of times I'm not sure if he knows whether to scratch his ass or wind his watch. Okay. Ari is 100% what you hear on the show. None of it is scripted. None of it is staged. None of it is even embellished for the benefit of the show. He is that person 100% of the time. And if by that, I know what you're thinking. So he's a sitcom character. 100%. Yes, he is. He is a living, breathing sitcom character. And frankly, I don't think we do enough with him. I think we probably need an episode where he's my butler or I'm his butler. And you know, we'll get that. Finally, with all the COVID restrictions lifting, we're getting to travel more. I do think we're going to get more of that. I'm very, very excited about our plans for this football season. You know, Ari's never been to a game in the SEC. I'm going to take him to a week of the SEC. We're going to pick the game, and I'm going to have you guys do that. So let's do that this week. I'm going to give you a choice of some games, and we're going to try to figure out the best game for Ari to go to. I think Florida, Tennessee in September is a good potential game. I think Knoxville's going to be hopping for that one. You know, we'll see how Tennessee does early. Obviously, LSU, Alabama is always a good choice. This is a year that the game's in Tuscaloosa, so yeah, we'll see. I want to take him to Tiger Stadium, but I'm just not sure when we want to. I kind of want to do this early. So that's the other issue too, is that game's not until November. Texas A&M at Alabama's in October. I thought about that one. So that's a possibility. I still think Tennessee being pumped about football and being very excited about their team and having a chance to maybe beat Florida, which has only happened once since 2005. I think would be pretty big. Tennessee does go to LSU on October 8th, though. If they were to beat Florida and were to, you know, be having a pretty good year, that would be pretty crazy. September 17th, we got Mississippi State going to Tiger Stadium. I think that could be fun. LSU at Auburn on October 1st could be fun. I think Auburn is one of those that, on the right day, and I've said this on the show, on the right day at Jordan-Hare Stadium, the visiting team could be the 85 Bears and would still lose. It is one of those places that is absolutely magical when the team is good, when the fans are pumped. The problem is I'm not sure they're going to be all that pumped this year, and at that point, I'm not sure how pumped they'll be about their team. So that one I'm a little worried about. But that Tennessee LSU game in Baton Rouge, that's starting to look very attractive. But what I want to do is I want to take Ari kind of through the league, and then we want to spend a week. Like, he flies to meet me. He can stay at my house that Sunday night, and I'll take him out and show him Gainesville. And then we just head out. You know, maybe we go to Athens, maybe we go to Tuscaloosa, maybe we go to Knoxville. And then we wind our way to wherever it is we're going. Whether, you know, if it's that Tennessee LSU game, we get to Baton Rouge. If it's Florida Tennessee, we wind up in Knoxville. But show him the whole week and the pageantry and the crazy nights in the bars and all that good stuff. So I want you guys to let me know at @Annie_Staples on Twitter. I could do a poll, but I honestly think there's too many choices to do a poll. So let's just go with, you tell me, what is the game that I can take Ari to? I let's just say early October is going to be our cutoff. So sorry for the LSU Alabama game. We'll get him to one of those eventually. But let's say early October is our cutoff. October 15th at the latest. Which game should I take him to? You tell me, and we'll figure it out, and we're going to have the greatest week of podcasts that you ever heard. I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to love it. And then, you know, just imagine the situations Ari's going to get himself into. That's the thing. I don't have to do anything. I just wind him up and let him go. And Charles, I'm telling you right now, that's who he is 100% of the time. So we don't know what he's going to be like. We get him going in a bar in Tuscaloosa. He's probably going to say something ridiculous about Ohio State being better than everybody else. And we might wind up running for our lives. Who knows? I can't wait. That's all I know. But on Tuesday, we should, if we got him back from Vegas, we didn't lose him to Sin City, we should have Ari back. And we'll be talking most important players on your favorite college football teams. And Ari has a riddle that blew his mind when he was drunk that we'll probably solve in about 2 seconds. But we won't tell him that. Talk to you later.